You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As the coronavirus pandemic continues, every week on the show, we've been having different conversations about the challenges that this situation can take on our mental health and offering different resources to help. Many of us have been counting the days since our life has been, quote, normal. People in recovery are used to counting days, but in a different way, marking time since they first got sober. And for millions of Americans who struggle with addiction, the stress and isolation caused by the pandemic can be especially challenging. As this situation continues to unfold, addiction experts locally and across the country are looking at different ways to meet people where they are and make sure they still have the support they need. Marissa Kirch is a social worker and the manager of addiction treatment services for Northwestern Medicine's Ben Gordon Center in DeKalb. She also oversees a women-only sober home. Also on the line with us, we have Dr. Thomas Wright. He's chief medical officer for the Rosecrans Health Network. Both of you, welcome to the 21st. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Just a note to our listeners, this conversation is one about addiction and sobriety. If you or someone you know is in recovery and have a question or want to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. That's 21st Show. And if you know someone needs help or if you need help or more resources about addiction, you can also call 1-800-662-HELP. Again, that number is 1-800-662-4357. Dr. Wright, I want to begin with you. I understand your facilities are still open, but you've had to make some changes to your daily operations. What does that look like for Rosecrans?
Yeah, we're still open. We're a healthcare agency, so certainly an essential service at Rosecrans. And we know that addiction or mental health issues aren't going to take a vacation or a break during this. And so people still need help. So we've done a lot in the last several weeks in order to sort of meet the need out there. Probably one of the biggest things that we've done is we've moved a lot of our outpatient therapy or our groups to video conferencing based on WebEx and some other platforms in order to offer this. We've moved most of our psychiatrists to being able to do their services through telepsych services, so they're sitting distant from the patients. Patients can actually call in from their home if they have internet services to their psychiatrist, or they can still come to our office and we'll set them up to see someone there. We're doing groups through video conferencing too, so lots of treatment is still going on and available. And certainly if people come in, and a lot of our patients still need to do that, they need to have that touch point and that reassurance of coming in. You know, we have been sanitizing our facilities. We provide masks for them. In some of our residential facilities, we reduced the size of our groups in order to offer appropriate social distancing to them, and certainly are educating all our clients and staff on proper sanitation methods that we need to do. We're pushing, and we know even from studies that the most important thing people can do is to wash their hands and not touch their face. So in addition to giving them masks, so, you know, we're putting that actually in the schedule for them to be able to do that.
So Marissa, I want to ask you sort of the same question. How have things changed your operations? Are things different day to day?
Oh, yeah. So we have also moved most of our services over to telehealth services. So we are still providing all of our group treatment, our individual one-on-one sessions, our psychiatry, case management, our job program services, pretty much everything via telehealth. So we got ourselves set up on different platforms like Skype, FaceTime, telephone to be able to meet those needs. And every treatment service line that we have is still running just via telehealth.
Okay. So over the past few weeks, we've been speaking, and I just kind of want to take a little step back here. We've been speaking with different mental health professionals about some of the challenges that have come along with this coronavirus crisis, social isolation, navigating relationships or loneliness, dealing with financial stress. And I wonder if you found that your clients, Marissa, are dealing with similar issues.
I think that one of the biggest struggles that we're seeing is that in general, we know people are meant for connection. Connection is a huge part of recovery. And so one of the things we work on in recovery is connecting to other people, connecting to a job, connecting to a purpose. And without that connection, people tend to connect into their addiction. And so what we're seeing right now is that struggle with being able to connect with other people, being able to connect with the workplace, with purpose, et cetera. And so people are turning more towards the addiction.
And are you hearing specific stories of that? I mean, people, especially people I would imagine who are earlier in their path to sobriety, is that particularly daunting for them?
I think a lot of people are really struggling with that increase in the mental health, for one, anxiety, depression due to being more isolated, having more time getting stuck in their thoughts. They have more free time available. And one of the things we do for people in early recovery is structure their time. And so even with the virtual programming that we're providing, they don't have to get transportation to get there. So that takes less time. You know, they don't have to get up, get ready in the same way that they would if they were actually going in person. And so they do have a lot more time on their hands, which makes things more stressful. It makes things a lot more difficult for them to stay sober and to find things to occupy all of the time during the day, especially if they are also not working at this time.
Yeah. And, you know, I think If one of the things they do with that free time is get on social media, it seems like I've seen a lot of, and maybe this just depends on what your circle is, but, you know, people joking about day drinking, coping, you know, things like that. I mean, are there messages like that that are, you know, not helpful, to say the least?
For sure. I think that we're seeing that a lot. I also think that if you just look outside, I know just driving to the Sober Living Home the other day, there were people out there drinking at 3 o'clock in the afternoon right outside the Sober Living Home and the neighbors.
Wow.
So, you know, it's right there in their face on top of it. And I think that's a big struggle. I think the other thing we've seen on social media as well is, you know, we treat all different forms of addiction, and eating disorders are something that we also do some work with and is a co-occurring diagnosis for some of our clients. And there's a lot of posting also about eating during this time and gaining weight during this time. And that is another struggle people are having is, you know, I have all this downtime. And so, you know, I'm using drugs or alcohol or I'm eating. And these are the things that I'm supposed to be working on. And now there's even more messages about eating and using substances with all the free time that we have.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we've been speaking with Melissa Kirch. She's a social worker and the manager of addiction treatment services for Northwestern Medicine's Ben Gordon Center in DeKalb. She also oversees a women's only sober home. Also on the line with us, we have Dr. Thomas Wright. He's chief medical officer for the Rosecrans Health Network. And a note to our listeners, if you or someone you know is in recovery or have a question and want to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Wright, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, from a medical perspective, about these challenges of addiction and staying clean, this idea of relapse triggers that are, I think, we've been sort of talking about here.
Well, you know, in addiction medicine or addiction treatment, we know that triggers happen all the time. And certainly this COVID crisis and some of the isolation, as Marissa said, you know, can be, or seeing people drink can be triggers. You know, in some ways, we don't try to avoid triggers too much because the idea is we need to teach them coping skills to manage these triggers. We certainly don't want to overwhelm them, which sometimes they're feeling right now, especially in early recovery. But triggers aren't necessarily a bad thing. You can learn a lot and practice a lot of your coping skills that we try to teach in order to manage that with this. So, I don't want to look at this as a silver lining, but there is some opportunity with this too at this time. But certainly we're seeing a lot of, as Marissa pointed out too, a lot more increase. What we know about addiction too is most of the time it doesn't happen in isolation. It happens in the context of depression or anxiety. Also about 80% of the cases do. So we're having to work a lot with our clients to help manage their anxiety to the depression that happens along with the isolation.
And, Dr. Wright, I understand that, you know, obviously the path to sobriety is different for everyone, but I think a big part of recovery for a lot of people is going to meetings and being able to share and meet in person. I know you mentioned that some of these activities have gone virtual, but is a virtual 12-step meeting the same thing? Is that a good enough substitute for being able to meet in person?
I think that's a great opportunity now, and there is a fair amount of research about, you know, online 12-step group self-help, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous that are available. And anybody can find it, too. You just have to Google online Alcoholics Anonymous or 12-step, and you don't even have to put the near me by it, because you can join a group in San Diego or wherever, you know, in order to do that. And there's a lot of information about the effectiveness of that right now. Certainly, you know, we all need that face-to-face contact, but this is a great opportunity given what the availability is of other people through the internet now. So it's simple to do, and people that are longer in their recovery, where 12-step or group self-help is their primary source, certainly the online groups are a really good alternative.
That's interesting, because I hadn't considered that. I guess if you wanted to get on with a group in San Diego, you don't have to worry about, you know, you can certainly get an even greater degree of anonymity than you could here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
But is there something lost without that, you know, the cups of coffee, the physical touch, the feeling of community?
Well, of course there has to be. I mean, there's something lost with that, with being next door. But, you know, there's also opportunity in it, too. Sometimes with given a little anonymity, people are more willing to share. So there's always a cost to that, but there might be a benefit to it, too. And some of the studies that are looking at that, you know, they look at the content, what people say and how other people respond to them, you know, in online versus face-to-face 12-step meetings are very, very similar, striking similarities to the communication patterns. So It certainly does look like it's a really viable alternative. People have to choose. Some people it doesn't work for at all, right? You know, it's just like sometimes a therapist doesn't work out for one person, and then you move on to the next or you do something differently. But, you know, I think it is certainly worth a try for everyone that needs that 12-step self-help support to do, and certainly is available right now. And growing, you know, by leaps and bounds, you know, this is one of the things that's happening as a result of this isolation is, you know, the availability of 12-step groups online is growing exponentially too.
Marissa, how have you in your organization been able to accommodate people who have these, you know, when you can't necessarily meet in person? How do you accommodate people and their needs, and what challenges has that posed?
Well, we have spent a lot of time working with our clients and getting them set up on the different telehealth options, getting their internet to work and getting their phones to work or their computers to work so that they are able to participate virtually. I think the biggest challenge with that is that we do have some clients who aren't very tech savvy, so having to do a little bit more hands-on with them, getting them set up. The other struggle is that there's a lot of distractions sometimes when you're participating in these activities from home. You know, potentially you have children going on in the background or your dog's barking or whatever it is that may be making it a little bit more difficult to stay focused and engaged on that platform. So I think that's kind of been a struggle for us there. Overall, though, I think, you know, the clients have been responding really well to it. We've gotten a lot of really positive feedback about it. On the plus side, it does eliminate some barriers that there were for people to attend treatment as far as transportation barriers or potentially some childcare barriers or just the way that timing lines up. They wouldn't have time to, you know, get somebody there to watch their kids and travel to group and make it on time. So, you know, there's some things that come out of it that are positive. And one of the things that people keep saying is, you know what, it's better than nothing. So at least this is still something that I can do to keep my life kind of structured, to get support, to be engaged in my recovery. And so I think that's been really great to hear, is that it's better than, you know, having no services available at all.
Yeah. And we have a call now, Annette from Pawpaw, Illinois. I understand she's been sober for 18 years, and you have a suggestion. Annette, we don't have a lot of time, so just
That's
really
fine.
Briefly, like 10, 15 seconds, what is your suggestion for how to cope at this time?
Well, my name's Annette. On the 12th of this month, we'll be 18 years, clean, sober, no relapse.
Congratulations.
2 years. Gateway, Grace House in Chicago. I, you know, 2 years of inpatient practically, but I've never relapsed. And my suggestion is stay busy and focused, reach out. Don't let your mind take you back to those places. And, you know, I'm stay busy. I have 2 dogs. Mm-hmm. I have 3 birds. I have a house now. I have a new car. You know, I'm retired now, but 18 years, no relapses. Stay busy. You know, there's hope. You can change your life. You know, you just got to keep looking forward. Don't look behind. You know, don't look in the past, because that's only going to lead you to death, jail, or insanity. And I thank my higher power and for all the help that I received. And just hang in there and reach out to people.
All right, Annette, thank you so much for calling in. Thanks for calling, Annette. So Marissa, we heard there, stay busy, you know, look forward. What advice do you have for people who can't connect with a healthcare provider like you? Are there things they can do where they're at? And we've only got about a minute left here.
Yeah, I definitely recommend finding online support, structuring your time as much as you can, practicing your daily self-care, and connecting virtually as much as possible. There's lots of options out there.
And Dr. Wright, same question to you. I wonder, what are you doing to maintain, take this in a different direction, what are you doing to maintain your own mental health, doctor, as this, you know, situation is going on? Because you are not only dealing with your own self and family, but also all your patients, I would imagine, at this time, and taking on their concerns.
Well, sometimes doctors have trouble taking their own medicine, but I try to pay attention to what we're telling all our clients at Rosecrans, you know, and I think keeping a schedule is important. Make sure you eat regular meals, you know, when you're bored, don't eat, you know, eat regular meals, schedule your time, take breaks, get up at the usual time that you would get up. Exercise is available. Walking is a great exercise, and that's still available to us. Walk with social distancing and use the parks. These are all things that I'm trying to do, and we're recommending to patients too.
Dr. Thomas Wright is the Chief Medical Officer for the Rosecrans Health Network. We also spoke with Marissa Kirch. She's a social worker and the manager of addiction treatment services for Northwestern Medicine's Ben Gordon Center in DeKalb. Both of you, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about this important topic today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And just a note to our listeners, if you or someone you know needs help or more resources about addiction, please call 1-800-662-HELP. Again, that's 1-800-662-4357. Coming up, spring is a time for music students to share what they've been working on in recitals, but not during a global pandemic. So we'll be joined by a professor and four Illinois musicians ranging from third grade through grad school. They'll be with us for a conversation and a mini recital just ahead on the 21st. Stay with us.